think it's an important meditation for each of us to look for our own well. I'm sure you all know how important water is in the spiritual world. All life springing from water, and opening the water, eventually opening itself, of course, to the fire and the coming together of the fire and the water in the divine marriage. It's a strange thing in a society which is so soulless. So many people have no recognition of soul. They don't want to recognize it. They recognize that their life is empty, that they are running around an empty hole, which they are trying to fill with things, or they are trying to fill with their own particular addictive object. But if you begin to talk about soul, that is a nasty word. In fact, I know an analyst who was trying to find a place to rent. And when he spoke to the other analysts who owned the building, they asked him what his basic ideas were about. And he said, soul. And her response was, that's a word that starts with S. Those are dangerous words. Can you imagine this coming from an analyst? And she did not want him in the building, and he, of course, did not want to stay. I know with the film that Robert Bly and I made, there have been all kinds of comments. It is touchy-feely stuff. It's about soul. And the snarl is in the S as it's spoken. And the airy-fairy, or too deep for me. So that there is in the culture a fear of soul. And of course, we have with that the thirst for soul and the wasteland that T.S. Eliot prophesied in 1920. When I was thinking about what I would say, I went back through what I would call the sacred moments in my life that were connected to soul. And I would like to share some of these with you, hoping that you will bring into your own memory some of these moments for yourself. And I remembered T.S. Eliot's image of a necklace. He said, when we die, or are coming toward our death, or look back over our life, we can look at a necklace. And we can see on that necklace the moments when the divine crossed the human. These are the moments that make up our life. And I once made a picture of my own necklace. I had a wonderful time drawing this picture. It took me weeks because I was trying to think of the moments in my life when the divine crossed the human. And I drew them all in little cameos and joined them with gold chains. And I still have two left to fill in. So these are the moments that make up the motif of our life. If you look at your dreams, you can see that we are each one of us living our own myth. And that myth is captured in those moments, the still point, as Eliot calls it, except for the point, the still point, there is no dance, and there is only the dance. So this is a moment of paradox. So I will just share with you some of these moments. I was thinking of the birth of a child. The agony of the mother as the labor pains begin, and the tremendous excitement that is involved, and then the waters break. The waters are involved in each of these initiations. The waters break, and from these waters, new life is to come. And in that moment, when the mother just raises her arms and shouts in agony and joy, the baby's head appears. And you know you are in the presence of God. Something here has crossed the human threshold. And here is the mystery right in your hands. And you open to this. And then you may have the joy of holding that little creature from another reality. And your soul recognizes that other reality in this little one lying in your lap. And then we move on from birth. We think of ourselves as children and how we love to play in water. And how our mothers used to say, don't get in the mud. And of course, that's exactly what we did. Get into the mud. I loved playing in beet juice. Just be covered with beet juice. I even went to work in a canning factory and canned beets. And I was covered with red juice. It must have had something to do with blood, but I loved it. And as a child, I would can things in my playhouse with mountain ash berries and red peppers and beet juice. Beautiful cans of things. And the water would just be soaking. But it was the way of getting in touch with the juices of life. Without those juices, think of your dreams in water. Think of your dreams, on the other hand, that are in ice, in the winter snow, when you are not feeling and you go cold and you end up in a glass coffin or an ice coffin or a solarium with only sun and no water. Think of fairy tales where this repeatedly happens to the feminine. The feminine is the feeling connectedness that opens us into our universality, where everything is a part of everything else. Then I was thinking of adolescence. The young people that I loved for 25 years taught English and creative drama. And I was thinking back to the times when I worked with voice with them. It was creative drama, so we were making up our own plays, creating as we went. Things came, things went, and we allowed it right to the end of the last performance so that there was nothing static. Used to drive the light people crazy. But I can remember we were trying to do a section of the Wasteland, T.S. Eliot's Wasteland. Some of you may know the section where the lover comes to meet his so-called beloved. In the scene, she is pretty bored with him. He's basically bored. But she gets ready. She's sort of, you know, flops around the apartment doing her things, and she opens some tin cans for supper. Never thinks of a plate, never thinks of trying to make it beautiful, but they'll just have something out of some cans. So he arrives with his black hat and his umbrella, smiling with a big carbuncle on his neck. So they go through the gestures of lovemaking, and he leaves, and she says, well, that's over, and puts another record on the gramophone. Now, we were trying to do this scene because I believe and always believed that poetry had to hit the body. And if it didn't resonate in the body, it's like reading music. You're not hearing it. So my idea of teaching English was to bring the poem into the body. We had three pairs of young people doing this together. You see, we were trying to get the effect of a machine. So they were just going through the gestures at exactly the right time. Do you get the idea? The total mechanics of life. No soul. Just about 2 weeks before performance, one of the boys, 19 years old, said to me in rehearsal one night, I can't do this. Mrs. Woodman, I just cannot do this. I am going to vomit. And the other young men said, I'm going to vomit too. And the girl said, oh, thank goodness somebody said something. Now, I knew this was happening. I knew there was real trouble. But I decided to let them come to consciousness. And what was happening, what they were going through with no soul, a total parody of lovemaking, a parody of soul in the eating of food together, everything that is human and of the soul and of love is massacred in that section of the wasteland. And I was so glad when these young people said, I cannot do this. Every night I have a migraine headache. I'd do it for you if I could, but I can't do it. So I said, that's the end of that. We won't do it. But they were getting to know each other better. And the genuine feeling that was coming up from the body was being blocked. And this horror of blackness was in the bottom of all of that feeling. So the voice refused to verbalize it. And there was the authenticity of those young people. Similarly, I had a man, he must have been about 21, I think, was doing the lead on the 13th chapter of Corinthians. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, I am become a sounding brass and a tinkling cymbal. In the dress rehearsal, he came to me and he said, Marion, I can't do it. I said, what's wrong? He said, I know I will pass out if I try to say that. Because he said, I know it's true, but it's not true for me. And I just cannot be a hypocrite. And he said, I've tried to stay with it because I know it's dress rehearsal. I know what this means to the rest of the group. But I cannot say it. It would not come out of the throat. In other words, you know, the last line, and now abideth faith, hope, and love. These three. But the greatest of these is love. If the body doesn't believe that, it will not come out of the mouth unless you just squawk it out. You know, you can do it like that. And you can squawk. But nobody's going to believe you. Because you're not there. You see, it's water in the throat. If the juices are flowing, it comes out. Think of fairy tales. There are many stories where there's a forbidden room and the demonic is pinned on the wall. It can be a raven, it can be a man chained. It represents the evil in the story that has to be transformed. And what is it always crying for? Water, water, water. And without water, it has no vitality. So in order for it to find any kind of transformation, it must go through the water. And so we move on into marriage. I'm sure you can always remember your own wedding. Perhaps tears flowing in every direction. Again, the water. The sweat. I mean, there's nothing like sweat to really bring on the instinctual energies. We spoil it all with deodorants, of course, in our culture. But the juices of the body and the glow on the face, the incandescence of the skin, depends on the water of life. And the energies that come through in the transformation through the tears. And the lovemaking is dependent on moisture and love. And as we move closer to death, I'm sure all of you know the profound experience of swabbing your beloved's lips with water. There is nothing else to do, and the body is leaving, and you put the swabs on the lips. And so it seems to me in the sacred moments of life, the soul moments, water is always with us. And it's the moment, that still moment, that holds the paradox of ecstasy and grief. The baby coming into the world, expressing the new life and the joy of being here, and you look at it and you think, you poor little thing, what will you see before it's over? You watch the death of someone you love, and you are caught between being glad that they are being freed, the soul is being freed into its own reality, at the same time they are leaving you. So you have the ultimate freedom, the ultimate finding, and the ultimate losing. All in that one moment, because it's the coming together of the eternal soul and the temporal body. And there is a collision of opposites. The soul that is seeing from the divine point of view, the eternal point of view, and the body that is caught in the temporal. Now, some of you may think, well, what's this all got to do with soul? You know what we do with soul after a birth? The mother starts to cry. Mother feels very lonely, very lost. And the doctors say it's postpartum depression. And give her a drug to help her with her postpartum depression. And you see what that does to the soul? The soul is ready to sing. And it may be a sad song, but let it sing its sad song. So many times in dreams, I see this little bird or this little baby half starved, and the dreamer looks at it and says, "What are you doing?" And it says, "I only wanted to sing my song." And you never gave me a chance. Of course, the dreamer doesn't even know there ever was a song. And it is so heartbreaking. And I am really impassioned about this. I look at television and I think there is no soul on that television tonight at all. And I watch the news, just slam, 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 slam. What does that do to us? If you still managed to hold and contain what you were born with, it is right at the deepest possible level. And we have to find ways to defend ourselves in the culture we are in. I've seen the same thing with death, where a person is moving through the ultimate marriage, where the feminine is coming to meet the groom. In a dying man, it's usually the bride who comes to meet the groom. In a woman, of course, the groom is coming to meet the bride. And often it takes 3 or 4 days. And people say, oh, they've been on morphine, you know. Don't pay attention to it. It's just crazy, just goofy. I don't want to remember my father that way. But it is not the craziness of a morphine trance. The morphine may be affecting it because the morphine is bringing them closer into the archetypal world. But what is going on? They are preparing for their wedding. And the soul is shedding its unnecessary luggage from this life, opening up into essence and saying, where is my beloved? And as the process works its way through, if you listen to the dying, if you listen, don't question, don't make them doubt their process, whatever you do. Listen to the soul. And they will feed you more than you could ever imagine. And eventually, they will come through to the wedding banquet. And then they are free to go. And you are free to let them go. You have lost them on this side. But the soul has been born into its own reality.